Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Gnostic Media's Unspun podcast, episode number 112. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. I'm here with lovely Holly Seeliger, and we're also here with Caleb Thomas today. We have a great show today. We have a lot of information to cover on a very deep and dark topic. We started looking at this, and Holly and I have been looking at the subject due to our Salem research, and I had posted something over the week about that I thought that all plagues were caused intentionally, and Caleb had posted that he thought the same thing, and Holly and I had been thinking the same thing, looking at over all of the research. So we figured it was a good time to do a show on this topic to bring attention to it. Also, a lot of what we're presenting today will be speculative because the research is so hard to dig up. So we're, asking for the audience's help for anything that you may have to help flesh this history out. Holly, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
And Caleb, welcome on.
Thanks for having me.
And Caleb, why don't you jump in and let's talk about the Justinian plague first. And we're going to go through a history basically of plagues and, sort of what's happened and try to bring a new perspective of plagues, because people think in general that they were just organic outbreaks of people in communities that were unclean, etc. So we're going to show, hopefully, solid evidence to essentially begin to look at this in a new light.
Yeah, exactly. So when you first were saying that you thought that the plagues might be possibly orchestrated by a specific group, that fit perfectly into the research that I had been doing. And as far as the Justinian plague, that was one of the first things I figured I'd start at the very beginning, figure out, can we trace this back to its roots? And sure enough, the Justinian plague I'll read from the Wikipedia. It was a pandemic that affected Eastern Roman, the Byzantine Empire, especially its capital, Constantinople, which for people who are familiar with the flamenco work, he kind of is alluding to the fact that that might have been the cradle of civilization of the Tartars, the possible location of Israel, and so that was a huge eye-opening bubble. So it says, and the port cities around the entire Mediterranean Sea, one of the deadliest plagues in history, this devastating pandemic resulted in the deaths of an estimated 25 million. And, that's just kind of an estimate. So, if we're talking about one of the large cities that could have possibly been the capital of the Tartars, it would make sense, A, that it would be a large number of people, because they would have to have been a huge number of those people that just disappeared for them to cover up this in history, obviously. And they could blame it on a plague, they could blame it on a natural thing. So here we go. At the time of the initial outbreak, that was at least 13% of the world's population, up to 15 million people in two centuries of reoccurrence. And there's a lot to this. I'll try to go quick because we got a lot to go over. But, they're basically going through and they're trying to blame this on a natural phenomenon, possibly of rats, possibly urinating or defecating on rice. And that could be the possible cause. Now, I don't know, from my research, you need a little bit more than just that specific, ingredient to cause an entire plague. But I don't know. I could go on and on about all the interesting things here about this plague. But
Yeah, well, you know, why don't we, you know, so let's get into Tartary a little bit, because Holly and I have been looking at Tartary in light of our research on Salem, and then, you know, going from there, and we discussed early in the Salem talks about how it appeared that it was related to inoculation research and this sort of thing. And so then that we started looking at the Royal Society. And then, you know, so when you see Tartary in there, and you see that the Dark Ages, if that's not enough, you know, if that does the name doesn't tell you enough, we're likely faked, like flamenco shows, like in my shows with Jacob Duhlman, then you collapse this 1,000-year period that probably never happened. And then we see the wipeout of this Tartar society and the attempt to cover it up, and using plagues to destroy the Tartars, the Black Plague, again, the black, there's that, you know, sign that it's a joke again, or it's an intentional trick, being done intentionally to destroy Tartary. And they estimate that between 70 to 200 million Europeans were killed in the Black Plague or the Black Death. Do you have something to add to that?
And then as we looked forward in history from the Black Death, there were several other plagues, both bubonic plagues, and then also it appeared as though smallpox hit Europe as well. We talked about the plague of 1665 in England that spread into the Great Fire. And then if you look into the New World history, you can see recurring smallpox plagues. And then we start to see evidence of it being purposefully spread. We've all heard the stories about, you know, the smallpox blankets being given to the native people. And then I've been connecting it recently to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation promoting a new inoculation, new vaccine that they want to make a universal flu vaccine. And it's on the anniversary of the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic. Bill Gates is warning people that another massive plague or smallpox, he said smallpox could reinvigorate and start up again on the anniversary of the Spanish flu.
And, you know, interestingly, the official claim of smallpox is that it was completely eradicated except for 2 stores of it. So that means, obviously, that they would intend to re-release the stores of this virus, quote unquote, if that's what we can even call it, if that's not all, you know, false information in and of itself. So, you know, anyway, you have something to add to that, Caleb?
Well, yeah, I would just point out that, you know, as you start researching, I mean, there's a huge body of work here in just the epidemics, pandemics, and the genocides alone. But if you start to look into the research, you'll see certain patterns that keep reemerging. And those patterns, you know, you'll find time and time again that the mainstream academics will try to suppress a lot of this information, and it, all the way up from back then to modern times. And it becomes fairly obvious the more you look into history. I think, you know, it's such a large body of work that very few people have time to go through and revise all this history. But, you know, and keep in mind, a lot of these things that I'm going to be referencing throughout the talk, I had 3 hours to get ready for. So if anybody wants more information on any of this research that I have, I'd be happy to provide any of the citations. But I am going to be generalizing here when I talk about some of these patterns. But for instance, when you guys are just talking about how you can connect some of these ancient plagues all the way up to current times with the vaccine industry and some of the stuff that is going on with the Bill Gates Foundation. And when I first saw that video a long time ago of him, you know, talking about his eugenics plan, you know, of you know, like
we shouldn't jump ahead too much, though.
Okay. Sorry.
you're giving away some of it. What we should, you know, what I want to get into here is, you know, some of these quotes that we have on the Black Death, you know, which was regarding Tartary, because the Black Death persecutions and massacres were a series of violent attacks. So there was the Black Death Jewish persecutions, as they're called. Now, and we've talked a little bit about this in the past. Now, there was a series of violent attacks, they claim, blamed on the Jewish communities for the Black Death. And of course, you know, it goes on to say, but in reality, the Jews were targets of Christian loathing. They never did anything wrong. We're always supposed to believe it's the evil Christian story, and the Jews were always in the right. They did no wrong. And when we start looking into this, you know, the official story becomes very problematic. So as the plague swept across Europe in the mid-14th century, annihilating nearly half of the population, Jews were taken as scapegoats. Now, again, Tartary has just fallen. So if we picture this, Tartary, the Jews were not in Israel where we think of them. It was Caesarea. And Tartary has fallen. It's suspected that the Judeans or the Judases took over, and, you know, the Khazars became the Kaisers, the Caesars, the Czars, the ruling class. You can look at, what is that, Matthew 14 something or other, where you know, Satan is tempting Jesus and he takes him on top of the mountain. He offers him all of the cities of the world if he bows to him. And, you know, Jesus doesn't take the story, but Judas does. So, you know, this is kind of the history of this Khazar thing. So they're, the official history is that they want you to believe that they did no wrong, that it's all just a Christian conspiracy against the Jews, and that they were completely innocent. And again, so, you know, the Jews, interestingly, now they state that there were many reasons why the Jews were accused, and because of the plague. One reason was anti-Semitism. And it goes on to say that, you know, that they just, it was just because they didn't accept Christ. Well, of course, as we've talked on the show, what that actually means, it's anti-logos or anti-truth. So if you don't accept truth and logos, that means you're an antinomian, and that means it's the inverse of truth. So it's like perpetuating lies and usury, and, you know, there were cases of human sacrifice and all of this stuff going on that weren't discussed. But, and then it goes on to say that the Jews were isolated in the ghettos, which meant, you know, some places where Jews were less affected, even though in other places it talks about how they were targeted. Why wouldn't the Christians target the Jewish communities? Why would a ghetto, which would be less clean, be less prone to, you know, these diseases? So, this brings up different issues. Now, you had brought up the Jewish population of Basel. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Hold on, let me find that in my notes.
Well, it says Jewish population of Basel were massacred amidst the accusations that they were responsible for causing the Black Death. Now, again, if we're looking at Caesarea and its collapse, etc., and Tartary's collapse due to Caesarea, etc., due to the betrayal of the 12 tribes by, as the official story goes, by Judas or the Judeans, the Judases, then we can follow the story through. The Black Death, then, which was estimated to have killed between 75 and 200 million people throughout the middle of the 14th century, arrived in the Central and Western Europe in 1348. You want to continue on with that?
Yeah, the pandemic spread through Savoy and soon began to kill people of the city of Basel. Convinced that the Jews of the city were dying of the disease less frequently than the Christians, the local population soon began to accuse the Jews of poisoning the wells.
Now, and that's actually where we get the poisoning the well fallacy.
Yes, sir.
From, interestingly.
Yep. Although accurate statistical evidence is lacking, numerous theories have been put forward to explain why Jews may have appeared to have suffered less from the disease. While one of these is based on the simple observation that Christians were less likely to see Jewish victims due to the fact that they were buried in separate cemeteries. Another suggests that the strict Jewish dietary rituals meant that Jewish homes were much less appealing to the rats that are believed to have carried the plague. Yeah, right. Under pressure from the powerful guilds, many of whom had obtained confessions from local Jews under torture, the city fathers responded with extraordinary ruthlessness. Having separated children from their parents, the adult Jews were suspiciously a specially constructed wooden barn on an island in the Rhine. Here they are shackled together and the structures set on fire, leaving the victims to burn alive. The surviving children were forcefully converted to Christianity while Jews were banned from the entire city for 200 years, again blaming the Christians. The Black Death itself continued to ravage Europe for around another 4 years, killing between 30% and 60% of the entire population of the continent. So it seems you get this pattern of it's almost like the Hegelian dialectic. You get the same people always being blamed. So it's like they have a problem, then this problem always gets blamed on one specific group of people. And if these group of people get pointed out, then they scream, "We're the victims." Right.
And you're an anti-Semite or whatever, yeah. Which is the exact same case with Salem, or with the Bolshevik Revolution. I mean, we could go on and on and on with dozens of examples there.
Exactly, and that's the big pattern right there. Is they're pushing this agenda, and not only does this agenda that they're pushing in our modern times, this communist agenda, it fits right into place what happened in the past. It's this. It's very consistent, and it's easy to follow for anybody who has eyes to see it.
Absolutely. So, Holly, do you want to talk about the London Plague?
So, we had just talked about the Great Plague or the Black Death. So there was a couple of different strains of this plague that was going through Europe. There was like the bubonic plague, and then there was one which people suspect was more smallpox related, and then one that was more like of a respiratory disease. And then the 1665 plague in London was one of the last plagues to go through Europe in this era. And people thought it was from a flea. And Jan and I did a video about how Robert Hooke, one of the founders of the Royal Society, had a book called Micrographia that came out around the same year, which showed the first viewings of the plague flea itself. He had used microscopes, which was a new invention at the time, and had done drawings, and in his book Micrographia he showed the first plague flea. And this was going through, he published this book just as the Great Plague of London hit. And right as the plague hit, the Great Fire in 1666 hit London. The official narrative of the story is that the Great Fire of London cleaned up and ended the plague, and within the ashes, the city of London could be built. And it was, of course, redrawn by Robert Hooke and recreated with the Robert Hooke. Members of the Royal Society redrew the city of London, and there's a drawing right there of the plague flea. So it's just coincidence, of course, that we think that particular plague could have been spread by fleas, and Robert Hooke of the Royal Society is publishing the first drawings of the flea.
Wink, wink. It's just, always just coincidence. So the Royal Society figures heavily in all of this, as does Harvard College in the 16th century. And then that connects to Cotton Mather at who was the president of Harvard, and of course his father was or grandfather was John Cotton, and his father was
Increase Mather.
Right. So, these guys are running the show. They create the distraction and the ruckus and everything that Holly and I have exposed going on at Salem, but they're also the same group of people working on the early inoculation studies, which when you go out and you begin, you know, and you do research on inoculations, it's like early 1900s, late 1800s. They don't want to talk about the stuff in the 1690s regarding Salem, because then that, you know, creates a whole new avenue of investigation that they don't want anybody, you know, looking into regarding all of this stuff. So, you know, so you have the Royal Society in there, and it's, they're always studying the same things. Like they, you know, Arthur Stoll, who is a member of the Royal Society, he's studying ergot and all of this. And then he's Albert Hofmann's boss at Sandoz. And in my opinion, it was Stoll who created LSD, and Albert Hofmann was a cover story. But, you know, so these things are used like ergot poisoning and then plague. So these are the two things that the Royal Society for hundreds of years has been studying. So, you know, they're tied directly to the Plague of London. And I wouldn't be surprised if people from there were in some way related to what was done to Tartary or the descendants of those people or something like that. So,
yeah,
you know, it goes, go ahead.
One of the commenters in the chat just says that all these trails lead back to Switzerland and we're just leaving it alone. Well, just a few minutes ago, we were talking about Basel, that's Switzerland, and also John Calvin from Calvinism that we've discussed when we talked about Protestantism, Antinomianism, that also ties back to Switzerland. So there's your shout out, John.
Yeah. So, you know, just because we haven't mentioned something doesn't mean we're trying to hide it. So you don't need to be accusatory. So let's see. So then, you know, Cotton Mather ties to another, you know, scandalous character in history, a guy by the name of, you may have heard of him, Ben Franklin. And, you know, this guy, of course, in the late 90s, they found, you know, what, 15 bodies in his basement and things like that, you know, that had been buried. And he had been doing human experiments. And it's possible that he was involved in this. Of course, Cotton Mather was involved in early 1700s inoculation scandals where he caused a riot in his hometown and they attacked and I think they burned down his house or tried to burn it down. And, you know, so there's all of this early stuff going on regarding Harvard, Cotton Mather, Ben Franklin. I think Cotton Mather was Ben Franklin's handler. And, you know, and then, you know, and they're all surrounding pamphleteering, they're all propagandists. And so they're all promoting these same, you know, sort of themes. So it's all tied to these guys. Now, interestingly, as we've been showing through our research, and we'll be showing more of when we get our book done, is that the Puritans were actually, so what had happened is, because of these scandals in Europe and because of the, you know, like these plague outbreaks and because of usury and human sacrifice, and these are, there are official court records that are still available from these instances. Because of these things, Judaism had been outlawed in Europe. It wasn't because they were the hapless victims who didn't do anything. It was actually because they were antinomians who could do no wrong, and they felt that they owed it to the Christians for taking their land inheritance, or because they lost their land inheritance because of their betrayal. And so apparently this is how they took care of things, by creating these plagues and these disease outbreaks. So Judaism was outlawed. It wasn't because they were innocent. So those, many of them converted into many of the different Protestant religions. John Calvin, for instance, or Cohen more properly, you know, and then even Martin Luther was a murderer, and Puritanism was essentially just Judaism with the Christian veneer. And Puritanism is named after the Purim, which is where the Jews celebrate the massacre of 75,000 Persians under Haman. And they pretend that they were the victims, where they're flipping it again. They're always the victims in this stuff, even if they're committing the thing. So, you know, we always see the same repeated pattern over and over. We're the victims. We're the victims. Oh, I'm an anti-Semite. You know, or you're an anti-Semite if you point anything out. So what happens is at Judaism's outlaw, many of them get on boats and they go to the New World, to South America. So many of them travel with Cortez, which we'll be getting into. Many of them go to New England. Many of them go, you know, different places around the world. Do you want to jump in there, Caleb?
Yeah, I mean, all the stuff that you and Holly so brilliantly have discovered about the Puritans go hand in hand with, like, you take that straightforward, like you were just talking about, that goes into Harvard and how all of a sudden this idea of the inoculation starts coming out of the need to prevent the plague and to prevent these things. So they cause a problem and then they come up with, oh, here's the solution that we conveniently
problem,
have.
Problem, reaction, solution.
And as to where before, possibly in old times when, you know, you see what I just read, you know, how people were accusing the people of doing it, now they can't so easily trace it back because it's such a slow kill. They do it with the diet, and it's all about inversion, just like you guys said. They flip your diet upside down, and then they flip, you know, maybe we can get into this just shortly at some point, but the germ theory and other different theories that they use, they flip upside down possibly what they had before and use it as a way to get a lot of people to fall right in line with exactly what they wanted them to do from the very beginning.
Sorry, we're trying to make room here. So, you know, what I wanted to do is discuss the word pandemics itself, because pandemics, the root of that is pan. And, of course, pan, now, when you look up the root of these words, they always say it means like broad, wide, across, etc. But excuse me, let's see if I think I misplaced it. So it means all or demos, people, etc. So all people. But pan is also like the satire Baphomet-like god related to Satan. So it's a pandemic. And so these are usually caused by, again, well, you know, black magic, dark magic, black plague, you know, the dark ages, all, you know, all of these signs that they give us to tell us that it's a trick. So, and then, you know, so it's these pandemics. So they tell you what it is right in the title of this stuff, and then pretend that it was some organic outbreak again from, you know, rats, from, you know, something like that. So we'll get into that here in a second. Did you want to cover Jamestown?
So we had also looked into use of chemical warfare in disease and how this ties into plagues. And one of the earliest that we found in the New World was something called Jimson weed. And that was the use of a datura plant. Then we have some primary resources talking about Jimson weed being used both on the native people and within the colonists in Jamestown, Massachusetts. So we have some evidence about, it's similar to when you take a datura or Jimson weed, the people were sick for about a week. They were basically tripping out and being very ill.
Scopolamine, which is wicked, wicked stuff, which ties to that Skripal, you know, case in England and whatnot. So, you know, so when we get into, you know, the Native Americans and the plagues, now, interestingly, you know, Cortez was a Marrano, which was basically, that's a Jew who converts or takes on Christianity or converts to Christianity. Many of them just pretended to take on Christianity. But, and then what was like a third of his ship were also Marranos. And so then,
and same with Columbus.
And same with Columbus. Now, there's a really interesting story. Now, this is the Florentine Codex. This is by Friar Sahugan from the late 15th, early 16th century. This is book 12, by the way, for those who want to follow up on this. And I think it's page 89 there. Hopefully I still have it marked. But so, you know, and there's the citation there for people who want to follow up and just, you know I'm telling you the truth about what it says there. So Friar Sahugan, and these are Aztec reports that they're giving it to Sahugan. So Friar Sahugan is actually a Jewish Murano pretending to be a Christian friar.
Jesuit,
and reporting on the smallpox plague that breaks out in and around Mexico and Montezuma's. You know, I mean, Montezuma was a tyrant too, and he was, you know, the Spanish had no problem getting recruits to join up with them because, you know, the people were so fed up with Montezuma's empire and slavery and human sacrificing. But so the 29th chapter, and again, Florentine Codex, book 12, in which it is told how there came a plague of which the natives died. Its name was smallpox. It was at the time that the Spanish set forth from Mexico. Quote, but before the Spaniards had risen against us, first there came to be prevalent a great sickness, a plague. Now, interestingly, if we look up the word plague, it also means strike. Okay, what's a military strike? What's a plague? Strike, plague, it's the same word. So they strike. So, you know, why would you use a word like plague to describe an outbreak of a disease? Why would you use a word like strike as an outbreak of for a disease? So again, you know, we have this inversion, you know, so when we realize that the word plague means strike, then it makes sense. And so going on, spread over the people a great destruction of men. At this time, this plague prevailed indeed 60 days. 60 day signs when it ended, when it diminished, when it was realized that there was reviving. The plague was already going toward Chalco. At the time, the Mexicans, the brave warriors, were able to recover from the pestilence. And when this had happened, then the Spaniards came. When this had happened, then the Spaniards came. So the Spaniards send in the smallpox, wipe the people out, wait for it to kill everybody off. They stay out of it, and then they come in, and then they attack. So it's exactly what we see with you know, what we just discussed with Tartary.
Yeah, exactly. It's weaponized technology. It's this plague is nothing new. It's been the exact same way throughout history. Now it's just being repackaged into, you know, now modern warfare uses all kinds of different, you know, weaponized technology to, you know, there's many different examples, but, and I would also add that pretty much all the ships that were involved in this, every single one of them that I have looked into have been crypto Jews, every single, one of the, even the
who were blamed again, the same tactic every time, who was blamed for these things but the Christians
every time. Yes, sir.
Every single time. So they
am I mistaken by saying I read in one of these many books I have here, I'm actually interested in Christopher Columbus, because doesn't the root word mean, I think it's Cristobal Colomba, it's Christian colonizer. I'm kind of vague on whether he actually exists or not, or if he was a real person otherwise, or if he was just made up to you know, to blame the Christians. Christopher Columbus, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, sorry about that. I had to move the camera cord and I forgot I didn't move it before. So
you had mentioned that we have these firsthand accounts of the disease coming in, wiping out native populations, and then the colonizers come in. So we also have evidence of this happening in Canada. There were Iroquois and Abenaki testimonies saying that this pestilence came in and wiped out the people, and then the Jesuits would come in, and then the colonizers would come in, and this was in Canada, so this was in the 1700s, this was also reported, and it happened in the Caribbean as well. You just brought up Columbus, and in the West Indies, there's the theory with syphilis, which they call the Great Pox, and they say that that started, you know, they have two theories about when the Great Pox or syphilis came to Europe, and there's the pre-Columbian theory and the post-Columbian theory. So the main theory is that Columbus's ships brought the Great Pox from the West Indies into Europe.
Yeah, so, and then there was another issue relating to all of this to Barbados and the Caribbean. And we talked about earlier with Caleb about them, you know, intentionally lowering the immune system. So interestingly, rum and sugar are big at lowering the immune system. And you had figured that out.
I had seen a correlation between the country of Barbados when we were doing research for the Salem Project. Most of the major players in Salem owned plantations in Barbados. So Salem was a very rich merchant class city. It was one of the richest cities in the country. And they had connections, major connections, seaports to the country of Barbados. And that was a sugar plantation. It was also the basis for rum and what we think of as stereotypical pirates in the area. And I had wondered if the correlation between the plague outbreaks and the spread, the concentration of sugar being grown in Barbados and in the West Indies during this era and being really pushed in Europe and on the American colonies. That's when people really got hooked on sugar, was during this era.
Yeah, and thanks, Anthony, for both of your donations. I really appreciate it. Please support the show. We are listener supported. And do appreciate it. All of our research and everything is supported by you all. So, you know, and why don't you add to that, Caleb? You had a lot more to add to lowering the immune system on that. And we'll go more into germ theory in a bit here.
Okay, so I have a background in nutrition. I used to be really into it before I shifted directions, but I have a degree in the art and science of detoxification. And in my studies of detoxification, I realized what the significance of this sugar is. More than the simple sugars, it's the complex sugars. It's the polysaccharides do much more harm than monosaccharides, but you know they both can do harm in certain situations. But so what I figured out was, you know, obviously they're peddling to us this high carb diet, you know, where everything breaks down to sugar. They're doing this inversion; they flip it upside down, and never do they ever talk about the function of fat utilization in ketosis. But they, you know, pretty much tell you that it's essential to eat high carb diet. Well, when you eat these high carb diets, you know, it does a number of things. A lot of people already know of all the different things that happen in the GI tract. But what's not very well known is what happens when the lymphatic system, which is the system that the human body uses as a sewer system, all your cells, you have millions of cells in your body, and they eat, and they also have waste. And the waste is like, basically, if you think of it like a house, it's the sewer system of a house. You have a septic tank, and you have to get rid of the waste. So all the waste goes down through the kidneys. Your cells are processed in through the kidneys, the cellular waste. Your waste is processed through your bowels. When the kidneys get backed up with too much sugar, then what happens is the lymphatic system backs up the same way that a septic tank might back up. And then all of a sudden there's, you know, sugar all over the place inside of the body, which
you mean
the bacteria.
Shit.
Yeah, literal.
Shit, sugar. And, sugar is synonymous with shit. Interesting.
Yeah. And here come all these bacteria to come clean up the mess. And then, you know, you get all these scientists, pseudoscientists, you know, starting back with like Pasteur and, you know, and others, but they're basically coming in saying, oh, well, there's all these bacteria. It must be the bacteria that is hurting everybody. Well, in reality, what they're doing is they're attacking your whole system, turning you into an acidic waste dump full of bacteria. And it's the environment inside the body that then allows overgrowth and all these different stages of the cell to manifest. You know, if you think of a cell, like a stem cell is its first stage, and it can possibly grow into all these other stages of growth. What happens is sometimes that cell, the very end of that cycle is like a decomposition cycle. Okay. And that decomposition cycle is when the body starts to decompose. Well, what are they doing? They're giving the body all the specific ingredients it needs to start decomposing and early death. And here we are trying to name all the different diseases and stuff when really it's just the same exact thing happening in different parts of the body. Does that make sense? So they use that.
Well, I lived it, you know, when I almost died in the ICU in 2009. I mean, it was hideous. And then figuring out ketosis and all of this and inverting it back and getting on a high fat diet and cutting all the carbos out and everything. And all of a sudden everything cleared up. Thanks, Sid Pistols, for the donation and nice comment. He says, Logos, bless your new family. We need more loving marriages in this world. So really,
amen to that.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
So I think that's a great point that you talk about lymphatic system and sugars. So I had just wondered a little bit, you know, with the there had been some sort of correlation between pushing the wheat diet and everything in Europe during that time, during the Middle Ages. With you know, bread and wheat, and then as the New World was formed, the real foundation of sugar and rum, and if that was also adding to the fact that people were getting ill.
Now, one thing I want to get into here is now there was this big Spanish flu outbreak in 1918. Now, interestingly, and I don't know if I put the right citation here. Let's see. Pandemic 1918. Anyway, you see the Spanish pandemic there? Sorry, folks. It just says the Spanish flu, darn it. Anyway, there was the Spanish pandemic, and I got the wrong page up there, but they tie it to the H1N1 virus. Now, as I was researching through this stuff, some really interesting comments were, you know, in there about it. Let's see. Oh, I think I mixed them up. Anyway, so, you know, basically they talk about how later on the H1N1 became a mix of, here it is, in 2009 became the swine flu. Now, listen to this. This is their sophistic logic, to put it nicely. In the 2009 flu pandemic, or swine flu, was an influenza pandemic, and the second of these of three pandemics involving the H1N1 influenza virus. The first of them, the 1918 flu pandemic, and so, and here I have the link for it. And so, you know, so we have this flu pandemic, and they have the virus here of all of this stuff. And so they go on to say here, the previous, which resulted when the previous triple reassortment of bird, swine, human viruses further combined with a Eurasian pig flu virus, leading to the term swine flu. So they want us to believe, okay, you know, that a bird, a swine, and a human virus all got together at a party one night. And then, you know, and then a Eurasian pig came along and jumped in. And so now there are these four viruses together. So then it's like a new H1N1. But this new H1N1, so then it's no longer H1N1 then, right? Because that would be the identification number. Then mutated, you know, and became like the party girl Lilith or something like that. And then was, you know, was like released or something like that. So, I mean, you know, clearly they put these things together and re-released this thing, you know. So, you know, this whole Spanish flu, swine flu thing, I think, you know, in my opinion, is nonsense. So let's see, I was just trying to go back up here. So
so the idea also of viruses, you know, as something that spread versus bacteria. I know you know a bit about the composition of viruses. Maybe you could explain a little bit to the audience about that.
Well, viruses are pretty interesting, to say the least. For anybody who's a medical student or somebody studying organic chemistry, the explanations for the virus, if you're not scratching your head, you know, I don't know what to tell you, because it is the explanation, you know, basically in a nutshell, what they're telling you is that over millions of years, somewhere in the rainforest and under the exact perfect conditions, it got created a virus, which is anaerobic, non-metabolizing. You know, they're not alive. They're these little geometric structures. And without getting, you know, too in depth in the lingo and for the layman, it's really just a little geometric structure that fits inside a cell receptor sites that gets your DNA, it gets your cells to read the wrong code, and the transcription between DNA and RNA get kind of jumbled up and messed up. But supposedly these can be dormant for any long period of time. And according to some of the researchers that I've been looking into, they're saying, you know, people like Dr. Tent, for example, he's saying that people can have all these different viruses in your body, and they can just be completely dormant while you're healthy. And then just from the right trigger, they can come alive. And there's some very interesting triggers when you get into the actual research. You start looking at see the most interesting thing that I find in organic chemistry these days is that we're not looking at when we're looking under the microscope, we don't have live microscopes like we used to. At one point in history, we used to look at, well, when I say we, it might have been one or two specific scientists, and their work has been suppressed, which is another topic. But you're looking at dead cells underneath microscopes. You have a culture, and you had try to control. So you try to, you know, kill the bacteria, kill the viruses, whatever, with a sterile situation. And when you actually look at all the different processes through the microscope, a whole different story starts to emerge. And that's why certain, you know, I don't want to invoke any new agey thought, but Bruce Lipton at least had one thing right, and that was the environment kind of has more of a trigger. And there's much more that needs to be known about this. Some work definitely needs to be pioneered. I would love to dedicate a large portion of my life trying to figure out how it all works, because very few people know, and it's very suppressed. So, but there are very many functions of human cells, stem cells, and the way it all works. And, you know, all you see is suppression. I'm sure you're well aware that you can't even get stem cell research in America. Like, they let you do little tiny studies, you know, here and there on your own cells with your own fat here and there. But all the really good stem cell research you have to go out of the country for, you know. But yeah, as far as viruses, what's interesting is there's a trigger, and I have questions like, are some of these vaccines causing the trigger? So I'm not really sure exactly what the immune system is after studying it for so long. I'm not really sure. You can't really point to something and go, this part is the immune system. You can point to the circulatory system, the respiratory system. When you breathe, you're detoxing it. You know, you have all these different levels of your body, but you can't say this is a specific, immune system. So it's hard to say we're attacking the immune system. It's deeper than that. It has a lot to do with pH and the environment around the cell. It has a lot to do with the sugar content. It has a lot to do with the function, how your protein synthesis and the clean environment of the oxygen. So it's in and outside the body, the environment. So there's a lot more that needs to be learned. You can't just boil it down to, oh, it's a vaccine or it's a virus. Because the more you look into it, anytime they label something cancer, turns out to just be another one of these things that we can cure with health. If you have good health, you don't get a lot of these issues. But right. So what they do is invert it.
Cancer seems to be largely surrounding sugar and carbs as well.
Yeah.
And Anton asks if he donates $10 if we can have a tea break. I'm going to have a coffee break right now for about 5 seconds. So Anton, you can call that a tea break.
And, yeah, I'll have a break with you for 5 seconds there.
There you go, Anton. So let's see. Now, and going back to the Pequot War in New England. So in 1619, diseases carried by the Europeans, of course, they blamed the Europeans. White people are blamed. Now, these are manufactured epidemics, apparently. But white Europeans are blamed, killing about 90% of the native population along the coast of New England. So, the story is inverted. It's not an intentional genocidal campaign against the Native Americans. Hapless, disease-carrying, dirty Europeans came over just carrying these nasty diseases. How they would live 3 months on a boat coming across the ocean without dying in the sea is a whole different issue. I mean, you're quarantined out there. And by the time you got to the other side, anybody who was like infected with anything would have been dead and thrown over the side. So, where are they getting this crap from that they feed us? So once you get that, then you realize that they've got to have something, some way, salmonella, feces, some way that they're creating the disease on, at the target location and then spreading it from there. That's my personal opinion. Others think that, maybe it was an infected person coming across. But again, if you're, you're traveling for 3 months, why would you have an infected person with this hideous disease on your ship, quarantined with you and all of your people to contaminate all of you? I mean, you'd throw the person overboard as quickly as possible. You'd have mutiny on your hands. So the official stories that I hear out there, they just don't make any sense unless you're dealing with a specific population. Like we started at the beginning of the show, like the Jews were accused of having special immunities to some of these things. So maybe we need to look at that. But the epidemic caused by smallpox reduced the Pequot population from about 8,000 to about 4,000 and seriously affected other tribes in the region. The catastrophic loss of populations upsets all aspects of Native life, creates uncertainty about the Native policy towards Europeans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, we can get into the smallpox blankets that were distributed. Now, today the official story is that it was, just bad science and they never really did that. There's no evidence linking that they actually did that. But now we're seeing a pattern where it was used militarily against Tartary and against the Native Americans who are Tartars. And against the Mexicans, who were likely Tartars. And then, we have to start looking at this and say, wait a second, is this an agenda against Tartars by chance? Maybe? And then when we look at the smallpox blankets, you know, okay, so, and it probably coming out of Harvard and the Royal Society and these same groups again to poison these, you know, these same groups of people. You know, so, you know, here's one story talking about it, the smallpox blankets. But, you know, and then here's the Pequot War and, you know, religious differences between Native Americans and Europeans. Diseases carried by Europeans cause a massive epidemic, killing about 90% of the population. Second epidemic does not spare any of the tribes. The epidemic caused by smallpox reduces the Pequot population from about 8,000 to 4,000. So, you know, we can see again, just like when Cortez rolls into Mexico, when the Muranos roll into Mexico. Now, again, we've shown extensively, and we have a lot more evidence we haven't even gone into, that the Puritans were Jews that put on the Puritan Christian veneer to hide behind. And then, you know, that's why they were fleeing Europe. They weren't fleeing Europe under persecution for being Christians. They were fleeing Europe for being Jews and doing this stuff in Europe, apparently, that they were accused of doing. And so they fled over here. And then they start doing these things to the Native Americans to wipe out. Now, you had found a quote from Queen Elizabeth. Do you want to talk about that?
So that's connected to Jamestown. And I believe it was to Sir Francis Bacon. You're kind of putting me on the spot here. But she had written a decree, Queen Elizabeth, that said that Francis Bacon could found Jamestown and any place within Virginia as long as they weren't taking the land or harming the Christian princes, the Christian princes or Christian people on the land. So she was implying back in the 1500s that there already were Christians in that area. And just to tie this back to the Pequot War, you touched upon it. So two major plagues hit the Pequot people. And the Pequot people were in charge of, we know the term wampum. So they were in charge of wampum in the area. And the Puritans went in there. They were wiped out with two plagues. And then they celebrated a genocide. They murdered the last of the Pequots. It was a complete annihilation of the people. And then the Puritans started taking over the money system of the native people there. So it was a 1-2 punch. They wiped them out. And it was very beneficial for them to take over the Pequots because they could then take over the wampum in the area. And then that was the end of the economy.
Exactly. Now, I'd like to get into some of the ways on how they potentially did this, which, you know, we brought up, Caleb had brought up rat urine earlier. We brought up, the potential of weaponized fleas and ticks. Now, when you think of a small, if you wanted to send a small carrier of a infectious disease, something that's so small you can't really even see it, you know, something like a flea or a tick might seem like a perfect carrier for something like that. You know, and we read earlier how they try to, you know, the bird and the pigs and the chickens and the ducks, and they all got together at a party and the viruses all mixed together by magic. And, you know, and then, you know, this new virus went out and attacked humans then after it came from all of these different things. So, you know, anyway.
Caleb, you had mentioned germ theory. So how does this tie in with...
well, that was, yeah, we were coming up to that. Yeah, we have notes here. But, you know, so, you know, do you want to add anything to the fleas and ticks?
Well, I remember a long time ago watching a documentary that was about how Lyme disease was largely from all the people researching in the documentary, they came to the conclusion that Lyme disease had to have been engineered in a lab for it to be as effective as it was and come pretty much out of nowhere. And all of a sudden it's, given to these ticks. And then you got these, and all these people keep getting affected around these specific places where they're doing this research too. I found that very interesting. So that's the pattern that I've seen when I look into a lot of these. You know, I don't have any primary documents or anything to back some of that up, but I do find it very interesting.
Yeah, and then, you know, another thing is feces. You know, that would be, a lot of these stories seem to center around feces for the creation of disease, animal waste of some sort, and they're living with it. You would have looked into that, hadn't you? No?
No.
So, no, and then,
I have seen that as a pattern that reoccurs. If you really look into all these incidences, it involves something to do with animal, either animal blood, animal feces, or animal waste of some sort. Actually,
right? Yeah, you know. Weird. So maybe these people were just like rubbing the feces all over them of like several different animals, and that's how they got together for the party. I mean, you know, it's like it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then another potential for the and you mentioned this, I think, earlier, for the outbreaks was the poisoning the well. You know, and this is where we get the fallacy from, because they would throw a dead animal in the well to poison a community, wipe out their water supply, and everybody would get sick and get dysentery, et cetera. So, you know, all of these things contribute. It's figuring out exactly how they're doing it, you know.
Exactly.
So let's see. Thank you again, Anthony, and thank you also, Anton, both for your donations without comment. We really appreciate that. So we already covered pandemic. Now, what I want to do is get into, you know, some of the modern stuff and sort of tie this together. Now, you know, so. You know, again, and Holly just brought up that you've done research on germ theory. So why don't we talk about this whole germ theory? And you kind of mentioned a little bit ago versus, like, you know, health and cleanliness.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So this could be a whole show all by itself. And most of my notes are written down. But pretty soon I'll put all these notes back up online for people to use as that they reference where I got all these sources from, the primary sources and all the citations. But just as a general overview here, so you got this guy, this real shady character in the beginning of French, when the French decided to switch their medicine over to a germ theory base. You got this guy named Louis Pasteur, and of course we followed suit. Very similarly, how the allopathic medicine was over there in Germany, you know, before the war, and then, you know, all these people that fled the war come to America, and then we got here, we got same story. But this guy Louis Pasteur is very interesting, especially because he does have a lot of work in the beginnings of French history of testing vaccines, you know, for the reason that he proposes, you know, before the germ theory, it's this they have this theory of spontaneous generation. Like they don't really understand how people just keep getting sick. And eventually Louis Pasteur comes up with a supposedly better idea about how, okay, so it's got to be transmission from person to person, okay? Not realizing that, A, you know, all these people are in the same environment, and it could possibly be the environment that's causing it. And there's probably a lot more to it. Like, say a germ, your body produces a germ, and that germ somehow, like a bacteria or whatever, if you put that germ or bacteria into another person's body who also has that environment where it can thrive, then maybe that's when it takes suits and there's some sort of a transmission. You know, we don't actually really know. More needs to be done in that area. But as far as the germ theory, And where it really hurts people is it's this idea. A lot of people probably have heard of Louis Pasteur. Pasteurized milk comes from his name. We pasteurize milk because of the idea that it needs to be kind of inoculated because of all the germs in there, and sterilized so that, you know, for human consumption. A lot of people are probably already savvy to the fact that, you know, raw milk probably, you know, there's a reason why it's illegal. It actually doesn't spoil as quick. If it's raw, it spoils faster if it's pasteurized. Well, anyways, in the early, just to kind of really vaguely summarize here to speed things up, you got this guy, Anton the Champ, who comes in to the scene and is basically saying, no, it's not, it's the environment. It isn't this germ. And they have this war going on between them. And sure enough, Louis Pasteur gets propped up much of the same way that modern scientists have gotten propped up out of nowhere, like Einstein, with very strange backgrounds, very questionable circumstances, and then they just get propped up in sainthood, and then from that day forward, it's business as usual. But as far as the germ theory goes, there's so much to go over. But really, it's the idea that the germ that is being transmitted from person to person is causing all these problems. When in reality, in my view, the germs are there as a result of the condition. It's like a fireman just showing up to put out the fire. That's what these little germs are. They're the garbage men coming to clean up the mess. They're eating all this this waste that's in your body, that's in your system, that your body isn't able to get rid of by itself. Kind of the same idea with a parasite. A lot of people, do all these cleanses to get rid of parasites. The parasite is keeping a lot of people alive. It's eating the death out of you, so to speak, because there's death and decay inside of you, and your body's having a hard time eliminating it. So here comes this, and somebody in the chat mentioned MMS. MMS can be good in certain situations, like for malaria. I've actually used it in the past. I don't see, MMS is kind of another one of those things that's on the line of we must attack the body. I don't like the idea that there's a war going on inside the body. It's more of a return the body to a natural homeostasis. That's
when you live in truth, and your body always tells you, eating sugar and stuff isn't good for you. You know, the grains aren't good for you, and yet we still do it, and then we feel like crap. And whenever we just live in truth and don't eat these things, then we don't have these problems. And the more of these that we can eliminate, the more and stay in truth all the time, the better we feel and the better our health gets. But if we're drinking a great big soda, it's sugar water, and then they carbonate it so it doesn't taste like crap. And and it's like, then you're having a cereal for breakfast. It doesn't matter the kind of cereal. All of it is crap. And you're having, hamburger, sandwich, lasagna, pizza, whatever for lunch and again for dinner. And you do this every day and you're just bombarding like two slices of bread is equivalent to a tablespoon of sugar. And if you're doing this every day, after, some years, your immune system is going to shut down. And we see this, in the massive obesity epidemic in this country, that, Americans are heavier than people on any other country in the world. And we wonder why, so if we just get back to this stuff, it starts taking care of itself on its own. So, what I want to do is, so Bill and Melinda Gates, they were discussing using vaccines to control, the world population. Of course, Bill Gates was ridiculed for his absurd, logic and mathematics, whatever, if you can call it logic at all. But, so this is this, people's services per person, energy per service, CO2, you know, so, you know, they want you to believe that CO2, the foundation of all life, is a poison. You know, again, everything is an inversion. But, you know, so Bill Gates creates this nonsense, and then he tells everybody that he's going to use vaccines to reduce global population. So you're either sterilizing people or you're killing them off directly. And, you know, and then this nonsense is paraded about. And then, so do you want to talk about this one, Holly?
Yeah, is this the article I sent you, or is this a different one?
Well, it might be a different one, but...
Okay. Well, the article that I had been referencing, and I have my own channel, I did a video about Bill Gates talking about how on the anniversary of the 1918 flu, the Spanish flu, he was warning at a recent conference about epidemics, which you had brought up, Caleb, that there always seems to be these scientific propagandists who put forward these ideas and really promote inoculation. So we've gone back as far as Cotton Mather. He was a major propagandist in early colonial America from Harvard. And then from there, Ben Franklin took over as a major propagandist of inoculations in the colonial era. And he was really pushing for people to get their children inoculated in colonial America, all these experiments. And a member of the Royal Society, of course, both of these individuals. And neither one of them were, you know, specifically scientists. You know, they were more pamphleteers or propagandists, as Ben Franklin had his own printing press, etc. And then here we have, to tie this to modern times, Bill and Melinda Gates. I mean, he's not a scientist. I mean, he's involved with computers, but he's, you know, he's not a virologist. He's not an epidemiologist. But yet he's speaking at these events promoting immunizations like no one ever has before. He's working right now with Google and Alphabet to create a new vaccine, because he's warning people that, you know, I think he said 30 million people could die from this new, he said it could be a new strain of smallpox or a new massive flu that could be hitting people at the anniversary of the 1918 Spanish flu. So I was just looking and reading between the lines and really seeing the agenda and the symbolism that's always so blatant when they talk about these diseases. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been experimenting on people in Africa for years, people in India. There's lawsuits facing Bill and Melinda Gates for paralyzing people. So they give people the polio vaccine, and then people end up paralyzed. So, you know, polio paralyzes people, and the polio vaccine apparently is paralyzing people.
Always with the crap. So, let's see. And we kind of already covered Aragot a little bit on this. Do you want to talk about Japan's attack on China and what they did there?
Do you happen to have that? There we go. They call it the Operation Cherry Blossom. So this is just a mainstream. You can look this up. This is Wikipedia. They're talking about how the Japanese military, as part of something called the Rape of Nanking that was in World War II, they used pathogens and dropped them on people in China. They experimented with the bubonic plague, cholera, smallpox, botulism, anthrax. So there's so many diseases that we haven't even touched on tonight, which all seem to follow the same pattern. Typhus, another interesting one.
Also cholera, caused by, carried by lice.
Yeah, so a lot of these diseases, I mean, I know it might sound crazy to the audience, but if you start to look into just basic World War II history and you look up Operation Cherry Blossom at night, they were experimenting with bubonic plague, smallpox, all this similar stuff, but yet we're told that now the smallpox blanket theory being used on Native Americans isn't real, that, you know, the plague being spread, the black plague being spread purposefully is just a rumor as well. But yet, if you look into recent history, it's all over the place, and we get warned all the time that we're told smallpox was eradicated in the 1970s, and yet, like Jan said, there's two locations where the smallpox is still held, and also we had touched upon Lyme's disease briefly, and there's a recent article that's saying that Lyme's disease is actually very closely related to syphilis. So it's like a spiral virus, and people have been talking about its connections to Plum Island and how it suddenly appeared in Lyme, Connecticut in the 1970s.
Exactly. Yeah. And also the, it is, it's a touchy subject, but like she said, when you research all the experiments that were being done during the wars, World War One and World War Two, and you get into the massive epidemics that a lot of people are saying that killed a lot of people during the wars, typhus being one of them. And, you know, I think it's important to how you can trace syphilis and typhus through throughout history, and you find really interesting similar patterns with and they go hand in hand with interesting topics like communism and sexual degeneracy, the promotion of sexual degeneracy. I know it's a touchy subject to talk about too, but the huge amount of issues that the gay people end up encountering. And, you know, like you said, you invert Logos upside down, and, you know, all these, basically Logos is explaining to you exactly how to avoid all these issues. And then these groups flip it upside down, and you see exactly why you don't do these things. There are direct consequences. And
you see exactly why you follow natural law and truth, because if you don't, you know, this is what happens to you.
Exactly. Yep.
So, yeah, there's lots of great comments. We're pretty... either of you have anything else you want to add?
Well, I would at least like to add on the top, since we didn't really get to any genocides, perhaps we'll have to do that at some other time. But there's very, very interesting connections with the genocides as well. And these massive killings throughout history, not just with inoculations and vaccines and pandemics like we're discussing, but for instance, just briefly to say it, like Japan, when we bombed Nagasaki, that's where the largest settlements of Christian Japanese were. The Holodomor, the genocide of Armenian Christians by the Young Turks, who were crypto Jews. You know, these same. I would at least just throw a plug to Christopher John Bjerknes. You know, he is the one who kind of red pilled me on all these vast.
I've tried to reach out to him before to have him on the show. He hasn't responded.
That'd be great if maybe we could get him on. That'd be great if we could figure that out. But
yeah, he wrote The Manufacture and Sale of St. Einstein as well.
Yeah, which that's actually my background is I come from more of a scientific background. I have way more information on science than I have on anything else. But my research into science and some of the books about Einstein that Christopher John Bjerknes put out kind of led me on to more information to lead me where I am now, as far as like where I'm linking up now with your work. It's all tying in really nicely. And all these, we could do a whole series of shows, I'm sure, on what I found in the scientific world and how they flip up science upside down, you know, and you know, it's just the inversion of Logos and all these characters. Go through the grammar, who, what, where, when. All the people are very shady in modern science, and it resembles more of a New Age religion than it does anything else.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, and they want us to put our, you know, children in the universities where they can mind control them. I wanted to say thank you to Ernesto for donating $25. I really appreciate that. Do you have anything else to add, Holly?
we'll have to just wait and see. I mean, we've got Bill and Melinda Gates talking about how, you know, there's diseases that could magically be spread again, and it always seems like Jan said a new flu, new mixture of flu that comes out, and a new way to treat it or a new experiment. So we'll just have to see where this goes.
Absolutely. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Caleb, for coming on tonight and helping us go through this. It's a deep, dark, extensive subject. Thanks for all the support, everyone. Please support the show. We are listener supported. Greatly appreciate everyone who supported tonight. Absolutely right, Count Roxo. He says it's a Saturnalian death cult. So please help support the show and the research. And we need to get out to Salem in the next few weeks and do more research out there. So greatly appreciate it. And that's it for me. And that's a wrap. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thanks for having me.